Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, guests, co-hosts, help you lead a more positively minded life. And today, we have in the studio with us, of course, Roberta Maria Atti. Hello, Roberta.
Hello, Armand.
Hey, we're talking about something fascinating. Today, I want you to listen because I think you've got a number of things that we're going to be talking about. We're going to talk about some of the consequences of emotional retreat, where you retreat with your mind to kind of hide out from the rest of the world because it's too difficult to be in the world at any given moment. We're going to talk about the alienated mind, the mind who feels separated from everybody else. Then we're going to take this a little further, my friends, and if you've ever had trouble losing weight, there's some insight in here that are really, really valuable because we're going to talk about the waterlogged person. Yeah, people get waterlogged. Did you ever notice this water retention that seems to be with many people who are overweight? Why are they retaining water? Well, it goes along with this mind. It's a physical syndrome, but we're going to explain the development of this physical syndrome from early on, and then we're going to bring it to the idea of a refugee syndrome. A refugee does not mean just somebody who, you know, is a person who flees from his home or country to seek refuge elsewhere. A refugee is somebody whose mind looks for shelter or protection from danger, difficulty, looking for a place of safety. Many of us became refugees in our own family. Some of us you could look at and you could say, well, our parents were dead, but, you know, we feel like orphans, but many of us were refugees. Do you know this idea, this feeling of being so alienated? Well, all of this today, alienated mind, solitude, refugee syndrome, and this relationship to water retention, how could you not listen? I want to start this off with talking about the strategy of the prehistoric brain, because, Roberta, I don't think we're just talking about the human brain, right, when we're talking about refugee syndrome?
No, Armand, we're going all the way back to when fishes came out of the water and figured out how to live on land.
There was a thing built into the amphibian brain.
Into the fish brain.
The reptilian brain, the fish brain.
The fish brain, right.
Which was how to stay alive if you feel separated from your group. Now, separated, get this the idea, alienated. You're a little kid. You're sitting at home. Your mother and father are fighting. And they're fighting, and your mother and father are screaming horrible things to each other, and you're 4 or 5 years old, and you hear, this is somebody who walked in to see me this morning, and you hear your mother screaming in her defensiveness, "You, I know how to get you, I'll get revenge, I will get revenge on you, and the way I'll get revenge is 1 year from today, I am going to die on this spot." Now, she's saying it to her husband, who, of course, is not taking it seriously. But the child of 4 or 5 years old starts counting, and every day she says, "Today is day 2. Mommy's going to die in so many days. Today is day 3. What happens to that mind? She believes that mommy's going to leave her. She believes that she is alone. Throughout her life, she talked about during that year how she used to reach through her bed to try to touch her mother to make sure mom was still there and that the day hadn't come yet. Refugees. You're in a family where there's so many people, it's so almost impossible to take care of you. You're one of 9 kids. How easy is it to feel like a refugee if none of the kids relate to you and your parents don't even notice you? How many of you have gone off on your own and realized there is nobody there? Even if they were at home, there was nobody there. Potential refugee syndrome. We're going to go into this, and it's not just a cute word because what it does to the body is phenomenal. And we're going to start off this morning with discussing this strategy of the brain, which I was going to say the human brain, but it's really animals and fishes' brain. You know, it goes really back in time. the strategy for how to deal with being separated from your parents, your flock, your school, your pride.
You see, Armand, it starts out with being separated from one's roots, because this actually, from what I know, happens to, it can happen to a plant as well. In fact, we have a category of plants that hold water. Exactly. It's the same dynamic. You see, because
well, people don't know about the water part yet, so we'll get to that later.
Okay, so the refugee syndrome, and we're talking about a physiological syndrome at this point, or at least I am. Armand is discussing the mind part, but in the body, there's a reflective thing going on, meaning that the body prepares itself for survival on its own. And this is something that happens to people who feel that somehow they have been abandoned or they are about to be abandoned.
Or are actually abandoned.
Or are actually abandoned by their group.
Now, the refugee syndrome, we're going to get this. A person or an animal or a thing or a plant.
A plant.
Believes that it is now separated from its original group, its support, or whatever it is, and it has to determine one way or another, how am I going to get through life being separated? And every one of us have in our brain this survival strategy, just in case. So if a bomb went off tomorrow and you were the last person on the planet, boom, this strategy would set in. It would set in for you. Because it's automatic, because it's built into every human, has a refugee strategy, just in case.
However, Armand, we have it as a potential, meaning that the brain is not normally in that mode. It only goes into that mode when the brain perceives that there is a threat of this nature.
We also have a death syndrome. We have a death. We are prepared. If we know our body is dying, our body is going to produce all of these maggots to bring the body to the soil. We have another program in our brain that we only use once when we die.
Yes.
When we actually die, right?
Yes. We have in the brain, we have the capacity to respond to unusual events, to extreme events, to emergency situations. But the brain, what we need to say, Armand, is that the brain is not always in that mode.
Right.
That it has the capacity to switch over to that mode. And when it does, the body adjusts to the changes. Meaning that it's not just the brain and the mind that register what's going on. The body has to follow.
We're going to show you how this works. This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. Very exciting. We're going to talk to you about your difficulties losing weight, believe it or not, indirectly. We're going to talk about feeling alienated, believing that you were abandoned when even you may physically or actually not have been abandoned, believing you're a sole survivor. Because every animal and every plant has the sole survivor strategy built into its genetic memory. It's there. It's in my, whatever it is, if I am the only person left standing, what do? I've got something potential to say, this is what I do next. Now, what the body does is fascinating. Because although your mind may have this strategy, what do I do next if the whole world disappears? And many of you have gone through this. You might have been in a fire where you lost a lot of things, or you suddenly felt alone, or you lost out traveling somewhere and you suddenly feel frightened, or you've been chased by some people and you're alone. You have these strategies come up in your mind. They look like a thinking strategy, but your body is reacting. The body is reacting like crazy. The body reacts whenever we go on any kind of overload. I mean, why do you think suddenly people have to go to the bathroom? Why do you think people feel this urgency to urinate when suddenly they're in danger? There's a body strategy there. It says drop the water because you're going to have to fight. Why do you think we secrete a blood clotting mechanism when we perceive danger? Because the body says you're about to get wounded. We have to have this blood clotting ready for you. Why do you think we hyperventilate? We hyperventilate because the body's attempting to grab more oxygen because it thinks it needs the oxygen for battle. Why do we lose sensation in our fingers and in our toes, but we feel more strength in our muscles? Because the body's trying to preserve the blood for the muscles that are necessary for the fight. Mm. You know, in fact, it is so automatic, it's kind of amazing, and we don't know what's going on. Now, this is what perceived danger, actual danger that you're going to confront. Here's another syndrome, a strategy. That is when you are perceived, when you perceive that you are going to be or have been abandoned. And it happens to plants, it happens to fish, it happens to invertebrates and vertebrates, and it happens to us. As we talk about it, I think we've discovered something that is very helpful as you learn about it more and more. Okay, let's now, Roberto, let's go to the very beginning strategy, which has to do with water retention, because I'm fascinated by it. I'm fascinated. Sure. I've been on diets in my life where I go on a fast for 3 days, and the first thing I do is lose 10 pounds of water. Mm. You know, and everybody does it. They lose a lot of water at first. Mm-hmm. And they say, oh, I've lost so much weight. And then as soon as they get off their diets, they put on the water again because there's water retention.
Or what's interesting also is that some people get stay on a diet that cannot possibly be causing them to put on any weight, and yet they put on weight. And what
people
they're putting
weight,
on, yeah, gain weight. And what they're gaining is water weight.
So there are people who are on a diet and who are actually losing fat.
Right, but they're,
gaining water weight.
Water, yes.
Fascinating. So and now how does this happen?
Well,
everybody has been...
And this is why I've done research in depth on this, Armand, because I work with clients who lose weight without a problem, and I have other people who gain weight when they go on a diet. And I've had to figure out how does this happen. And so I have found this theory which... to me, it makes a lot of sense. And I wanted to mention to you, it isn't only to be abandoned by one's tribe or family. It's also being separated from one's home. Because remember that not only, let's go all the way back, millions of years ago, life started in the water. And the first organisms, the first animals that came out of the water died. Why did they die? Because land is dry compared to water. If an organism, no matter how big or small it is adapted to living in water, if you take it out of water, that organism is going to perish. Unless it can figure out how to retain water.
The very first.
But there's another part to this. This pertains to a plant, to an animal, to an amphibian, to a human, to a mammal. But let's just look at humans. 98.2% of human history has happened with humans being hunter-gatherers, which means they were nomadic. They moved around and they followed where the food was. When a tribe of people leaves a place where they have been for a certain amount of time and moves to a different area, they often go through a period of time where food and water may be scarce. So the human body, as a result of being nomadic and hunter-gatherer for so long, has developed an exquisite capacity to survive in deprivation of food and water. But...
yes. You just took a major leap out of the water. Okay, let's go back, Roberta. I'm sorry. I know you're going to go and you're going to now carry this on, but I'm afraid our audience won't be able to follow. Let's go back to the water, okay? A fish wants to come out of the water. The first thing it's got to do, the first way it's going to get separated from the water, it has to develop an adaptation. How do I hold enough moisture in my body to survive? Now, when I'm in the water, I'm okay because I'm a fish and I can carry my own water. But now I'm going to crawl up on land. The first fish to crawl up on land was called the Crossopterygian. It had a very interesting syndrome. It had a thing. It developed lungs. It had two fins that were actually like lungs, and it could hold air. See, the first thing the fish had to do was be able to breathe above water. What happened was it was getting crowded under the water, right? Every time it would lay its eggs, there was no more room. Other fish would come and eat the eggs. So the Crossopterygian figured out, I'll crawl up on land and lay my eggs, and then I'll come back to the water. It needed enough lung power to get up on land. What it developed was these two lungs, and it crawled up on land using the lungs as feet. It really, truly happened. And it crawled up on land carrying this oxygen with it, laid its eggs, and crawled back to the water because it couldn't stay above land. Because to stay above land, it would not be able to get the moisture.
It had to make itself impermeable.
Sure.
That's another thing that had to change. The skin and the membranes.
Mm-hmm. And because impermeable to the rays of the sun.
Yes.
Which is beating down at all time, dehydrating everything. Taking the moisture out of everything
right.
to recreate the oceans. What part of the human body is water? 98% of the body?
Not quite that much, but I believe close to 80%.
80% of the human body
right.
is water, right? We take it for granted. Many people go on diets, as you said, and they're retaining water. You're saying, Roberta, that there is a thing inside people, a program, a strategy, that if they feel threatened or they believe they have lost their families, or if a plant believes it, or if a fish believes it, they are going to take on water. When it believes it is alone and separated from its parents or its group, it says, I have to survive alone. I cannot travel with my pack. How am I going to survive? I will take on water. Now, very interesting decision, I'll take on water. Let's not talk about plants. Let's talk about living beings. How would a being say to itself, I've got to take on water, therefore I'll absorb more water? Why would a person, isn't water dependent on antidiuretic hormone and stuff like that? How do you suddenly move into a strategy of retaining water?
See, yes, I was going to say, it's not so much that I'm going to take on water, but it's I'm going to hold on to what I have.
Okay, that's important.
Yeah, I'm going to hold on to it. How does a body do that? Well, it makes itself impermeable, and that's accomplished through hormonal changes that cause the permeability of cellular membranes to decrease, causes the permeability of the skin to decrease, so you sweat less. But the most important aspect of it is that some major adjustment goes on in the kidneys. Why? Because the kidneys are the organs majorly in charge of negotiating the water intake and outflow. So something has to happen in the kidneys in order to facilitate water retention. Now, also, Armand, it's interesting that people have come up with ideas like drinking their own urine. And there's a shortage of water, you would save water by doing that. Or when people are in the desert, you're told swallow your own saliva, bring up saliva into your mouth and then swallow it. So there are a lot of strategies that humans have come up with to conserve water in their bodies. But
okay,
this one
on,
that
no,
we're
wait,
talking about
back.
Is different.
I want to talk about the unconscious.
Right. This is different
okay,
because it happens
that, okay, Roberta.
Automatically as a result of a biological survival threat.
Okay. So before we go into the other strategies, this one. When you are, you have an automatic mechanism, an unconscious strategy, unconscious, it kicks in. It says to you, retain water. You don't even know it's saying it. But it kicks in. It does something to the kidneys. It says to the kidneys, decrease the permeability of your kidneys. Cells, right? Is that what it says?
From what I understand, yes. Yes.
Permeability of the kidney cells. What an interesting word. So what if they're not permeable? Well, if they're not permeable, then they're not negotiating the sodium-potassium balance and you're not leaking the water outside of you
right.
into a system that would eventually flow out of your body?
Correct.
Instead, you're holding it.
Yes, and you're holding it probably, as you pointed out, thanks to a hormonal shift. There is a hormone that it's an antidiuretic hormone secreted, I believe, by the pituitary gland in the brain, and that's increased. The antidiuretic hormone is increased.
Antidiuretic. Diuretic means it makes you urinate Antidiuretic means stop you from urinating.
Right. It decreases the permeability of these little tubules that collect water in the kidneys. It decreases the permeability of the tubules, so you're excreting less water.
Many of you know about ADH. You know about antidiuretic hormone because when they tell you to go on a salt-free diet, part of what they're trying to do is have you not retain water. ADH is secreted by high sodium. So if you go to a McDonald's and you eat a McDonald's hamburger, which has like 300 milligrams or 500 milligrams of sodium in it, your body is putting out this ADH, and it's saying, do not pass this water out of your body, because now you have the sodium inside there. And there's a sodium that becomes, if it becomes excessive and you eat a high salt diet, you retain water. It is not just the salt that is making you retain water. There is also, if your mind says, hold it back, the salt then adds to the problem of you holding up too much water. Now, let's just, before we go further, unconsciously, if you retain water, you can easily have a condition called edema.
Yes, there's something I want to say about sodium retention, Armand. That has been pretty much, you know, that people who retain water should decrease their sodium intake is really debatable at this point. And I have never recommended it, and I still don't. And I, in fact, when I work with people who tell me they don't eat any salt, I usually wonder if that's a good idea.
Yeah. Okay, we'll go into that discussion.
But what you said was important, because
if you do eat a lot of salt,
used to think that was the cause of it. And now what you and I are saying is that may be a factor, but it's not the cause.
Not only is it not the cause, this is what people know. Let's stick with what they know for a minute. What they know is, you know that if you eat salty foods, you're going to weigh more tomorrow morning. If you eat Chinese food, go for a Chinese dinner, you could be on a diet and you could pick the thinnest of the Chinese food menu, but with their high salt and MSG, you're going to wind up, even if you've just had soup, gaining weight in the morning. Why? Because the sodium triggered off this ADH. And the ADH is going to sit in there and it's going to tell you, hold on to your water. People who are on serious diets, I believe, every time they eat Chinese food, thinking that they're having some kind, because it's only vegetable and stuff like that, you know, and they try to really keep it thin, they gain weight on it. And they gain water weight, which is what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Edema. What is edema?
Edema is a swelling of tissues caused by retention of water. And the body facilitates and promotes edema every time the body is repairing some tissue. So anytime you have a repair job going on anywhere in the body, including the brain or any organ or the skin or anywhere, when you have a repair job going on, the body's gonna concentrate water in that area of the body, because along with the fluid part, what you get is nutrients, oxygen, electrolytes, all kinds of things that are necessary for this repair that's going on.
Every time the body perceives that there is something necessary for a little extra, it's gonna hold on to your water. It's gonna hold on to it because in that water, instead of passing out the nutrients and electrolytes, is going to tell you, try to retain them so that we could use them as much as possible. One of the tests of edema, of course, if you take your thumb and you press it into an area of your body like your ankle, if it leaves a white mark when you take your thumb away, that's edema. Because if you see when there's a pressure that stays like an indentation, when the indentation stays, that's edema. People, this is used by many physicians as a sign of heart danger. You know, if a person has that kind of edema, what they do is they test their ankles and they push and they say, is he holding on to a lot of water, as a possible relationship to a heart being compromised.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense to you?
Sure, it makes a lot of sense, because as you increase the amount of fluids in the vascular system, in the blood vessels, you run the risk of having too much water, too much fluid, and that can cause, of course, problems for the heart and the brain.
One of the first things that happen when a person goes in short of breath into an emergency room, if they test and they see edema, they give the person a water pill. The very first thing they do is they give you something to get rid of water.
Mm-hmm.
What is the danger to the heart when there's too much water? What's the immediate danger of a heart attack if there's too much water?
Well, there's an immediate danger because of the electrical dysfunction that happens when you're waterlogged, first of all, and the mechanical impediment to normal flow of blood, fluids, and everything in and out of the heart. So, I mean, anytime you have edema, you want to be able to control that edema because on one hand, it's usually reparatory, but on the other, it can cause big problems.
Edema, the swelling of the tissues in your body when you feel like you've taken on too much weight. Most overweight people have edema. They have it. There's water is retained in their bodies.
And in fact, there is there's now a very well recognized and studied and documented syndrome called Syndrome X, which is resistance to insulin. And it kind of goes hand in hand with this because the permeability is what we're talking about. When you have this kind of impermeability, often hand in hand, you have this inability on the part of the body to properly utilize glucose as well. So that's why overweight individuals often have both problems, the insulin resistance as well as the water retention.
Therefore, my friends, if you are feeling that you're challenged in this way, I want you to know unconsciously there is a program inside you. Unconsciously, if you have high swelling, trouble losing weight, you have something inside you that is saying you are abandoned. You are alone. You've got to get through. Now, we know often enough from people who are overweight that they have some kind of a set in their mind of this is all I could do to take care of myself. But I am taking care of myself by eating. But even though there are certain people who could diet and lose weight, there are other people who diet and they retain their weight, may even gain weight, because when the body gets this sense of abandonment, it goes to hold on to more water. So for many people who, when they diet, they look like they're starving themselves, the body's response is, give me more water, hold on to water. So there are people who diet who gain weight.
Mm-hmm. But also because when you diet, Armand, what you're doing is, you're telling your brain there's a shortage of food. So not only do you retain the water, but also you go into what we call the polar bear metabolism, which is a metabolism that polar bears get activated into towards the end of the daylight season and the beginning of the dark season, because the polar bears live in that part of the world where it's light for a certain amount of time and dark for the rest of the time. When it comes winter time and the bears are going to have to be in hibernation, therefore alone and isolated in an igloo somewhere in a hole of ice, their metabolism changes so that whatever they eat no longer is utilized for energy but is stored as fat underneath the skin. So when people who have both of these syndromes, the abandonment, the refugee syndrome, as well as the survival syndrome, when these people go on a diet, their bodies kick into the opposite direction, which is let's conserve water because we're now in the danger of being a refugee, abandoned, etc., and we need to conserve food as well, energy in the form of fat, because we may be starving to death.
Amazing, Roberta. We're going to take a short break, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Atti. We're talking about a mind that gets alienated, a body that gets alienated, the response to which can be what we call the refugee syndrome, and could also clearly affect the retention of water and all your attempts at losing weight. It's a fascinating discussion. We'll be back with you in a little bit. We have to play you a little music, because we always do. Here's a little something out of the spiritual community that may be related to this. What do you need to get through life?
I got a firm foundation from above, got an open heart.
That's the Staple Singers with I Need More Than a Hammer and Nails. Let me tell you something, friends. We do need more than a hammer and nail to get through life, but that's what happens to us. We have built into our systems, this is Armand DeMille with Roberta Atti and the Staple Singers. Talking about staples, we're talking about food staples, Roberta Menard, just a moment ago. I have to talk about those as well. What are your staples? What gets you through? What we're talking about is this incredible syndrome called the refugee syndrome, which is when your body and mind perceive that you are going to be left alone, have been left alone, or rendered alone to survive in this world without your troop, your group, your pride, your school, your flock. Your body has an automatic mechanism. It has this defense. It says, okay, how are we going to help you out? Here's how we're going to help you out. We're going to make you, number one, know that you're not going to be able to find water as easily as if you were with a whole tribe, because they would lead you to where the water is. And we're going to have you pick up and develop a way of holding on to more water, and this could become chronic. This water retention becomes a very important part of your life. And many of you know what we're talking about. Of course, if you work out and you sweat and you drop a lot of water, you see sometimes you could drop a great deal more water. But water retention, fascinating subject in how the mind does it. Back with Roberta. We're talking about this, Roberta. It's so fascinating. The way that the body holds on to the water is by functioning through the kidney. The kidney gives a signal, don't let it go. Right?
No, the brain gives a signal, and the kidneys obey the brain.
Now, one of the signs you'll see is concentrated.
There are several signs you could see. One sign could be concentrated urine, meaning that it's very dark.
It's very dark.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. It smells funny.
Smells like ammonia.
Mm-hmm.
What does it smell like?
It can smell like ammonia, or it can smell
like asparagus.
Well, let's say it smells, actually it takes on the smell of whatever you've eaten. I mean, it takes on the smell of things you've taken in, but it just smells funny. It doesn't smell like normal urine. Another thing, if you do a blood test, for instance, what you might find is that the creatinine is high, the test that shows the level of the creatinine. What you can find also in the urine itself, it's that when you do a urine test, it's that you might have some protein in the urine. And in fact, one of the dangers of the syndrome is that your body will go into a deficiency of protein. So one of the ways to help out is to make sure that you eat adequate amounts of protein.
Well, let's go back for a second. People, you know, it's a funny thing because there's been a law on the FCC. They're hunting people who talk in terms that are sometimes too graphic and too specific. They're saying it's almost never necessary. So you can't talk about excretion because it's a danger sign. You can't talk about sex for sure because it's a danger sign. And the FCC's been on a hunt to try to give licenses, take licenses and pick them up and eventually make every station prey to or susceptible to being absorbed by some of the larger conglomerates. So we got to do this in a delicate kind of way. And I think we're doing it right because we're doing it professionally and with love. Urine tests. Anybody can walk into a medical supply store and buy urine sticks. What a urine stick is it's a stick that you dip in to your urine, you wait 1 minute and you look at it and it gives you a number of signs. It tells you a number of things. Why is protein in the urine considered to be a danger?
Because it's a sign that the kidneys are not properly doing that they're not functioning well.
Well, how does that mean? How does protein in the urine mean your kidneys aren't functioning well? There should be no protein in your urine ever.
Well, a small amount. I mean, you have values above which or below which you're considered abnormal or normal. So if you go slightly above that value, which means there are too much protein in the urine, what that means is that the kidneys are not doing the job of excreting what needs to be excreted and conserving and sending back what needs to be conserved and sent back.
So the protein should be sent back?
The protein should be conserved. Yes, it shouldn't leak out into the kidneys. There's also a sign that could also be a sign that the liver is not working well, because you see, once you have this syndrome activated, even though, let's say, it focuses on the kidneys because they're the organs in charge of managing water release, but the whole body backs up. Every organ is slowed down. When the body's waterlogged, every organ is in danger of malfunctioning, because the first thing you've got to think of, Herman, is electricity. Then you've got to think of how is the body going to absorb what it needs to absorb if there's too much water and things are floating, right? Or how is the body, even the cell is surrounded in fluid, extracellular fluid, intracellular fluid. If the body is waterlogged, all of this fluid, there's too much of it, which means the cell cannot take in what it needs to feed itself, to clean itself, to live. And it also, when it releases things, they don't go anywhere. They don't go too far because it's full of water, so that the toxins excreted by the cell end up stagnating around it. So you see, you have a lot of things going on.
A lot of things going on. Now, one more thing. When people measure the fat content of their bodies, how does water retention and fat accumulation relate to each other?
They do, because of the permeability of cells. When you have cells that are impermeable, Armand, you also have cells that have difficulty negotiating the entrance of glucose or other nutrients. So the cell is impermeable to water. Water often is a carrier for other things back and forth. If water can't get in, many other things can't get in or out easily. So what you have is truly, the image I always give is this. If you have a restaurant, beautiful, five-star, top-of-the-line restaurant, top-notch quality restaurant, and you have deliveries every day, let's say that the person in charge of opening the restaurant forgot the key and keeps forgetting it, and all these deliveries get piled up, delivered outside of the front door. Well, what's going to happen? There's going to be a mountain of food that's going to rot and decay, going nowhere because it can't get into the restaurant where it can be cooked and served. This is what happens to the body when we have this condition. But what you and I are saying that is very interesting and fascinating and new is that this happens as a result of an adaptation to a stressful situation, at least in some cases.
So here we are, my friends. Here's one of the things that we could ask you. If you're somebody who retains a lot of water one way or another, if you do retain water, you may be in the refugee syndrome. You may be. Now, if you retain water and you're a thin person who lets go of a lot of water, you may still retain a great deal of water.
Yes.
That doesn't just indicate...
Oh, no, you could be in the refugee syndrome if you're very thin and you cannot retain the water. Because depending on what phase of that process you're in, you know, you see, someone who has this process, this syndrome, all their lives, which is often the case, they go back and forth between reactivating the conflict or the syndrome and then repairing it, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So depending on what phase the person is in, they could be losing a lot of water or losing a lot of weight or gaining a lot of water and gaining a lot of weight. But there are some people who never retaining, meaning their body is too permeable. And those are the people who have the opposite problem. They cannot retain any water.
Okay, now, how would weight retention affect, let's just say to start with the beginning, how about water retention? How would that affect your feeling of being awake or tired?
Water retention?
Yeah.
Oh, it would, I have never found anyone who's retaining water who feels energized.
You feel disenergized.
You feel disenergized, often depressed,
mm-hmm.
often moody, irritable, confused, waterlogged. I mean, people do say to me, I feel like I'm waterlogged.
It's like a sponge. Can you imagine if you're going through life where you're a piece of newspaper or a piece of cardboard and you're going through life and then suddenly, boom, you get wet.
And then people complain that, for instance, they seem to cry a lot at every moment. They have a lot of tears welling up in their eyes.
You have a suspicion that this is due to the
sure.
fact that there's excess water,
which is
coming about, by the way. We're not saying there's no emotional problems. We're saying there is an emotional recognition of how alone you are.
That's right. It often is kept below consciousness, Armand.
Of course.
But what I have noticed is that when I find these physiological symptoms and I discuss what I have learned about this syndrome with the person, often the person starts to cry. And I find that to be interesting because once they are explained this thing, it resonates with something that they've been very familiar with for a long time. It's just that no one ever verbalized it.
Also, you know, Roberta, in a good cry, you release a lot of excess water.
Definitely.
And, you know, a lot of people have said, oh, I need a good cry. Mm-hmm. They'll lay in their beds and they'll sob and sob and sob. And then they'll wake up and they'll feel better.
Sure.
Very often it's not that they've gone through some emotional grief that's so important, but they've kind of released some of the excess. Let me ask you one more question I think is important. Waterlogged brains. And now I know that, I hope people are following us. You absorb the water. You know, your kidneys back up. Your stuff happens to you. If you start accumulating water in your body, you accumulate it in different parts of your body. Do you actually retain water in your brain?
Oh, absolutely. The brain is an organ like the rest of the body. So, in fact, that's where you have the biggest danger, Armand, because when you have a waterlogged brain, well, you know, now you're starting to talk about electrical impulses in the brain. You're starting to talk about very delicate functions that could be altered easily by excessive fluids. So now you're talking about a dangerous situation. And that's why we're doing this show, because that's really what I would like to underline.
A dangerous situation, pressure in the cranium. People talk about feeling pressure in their heads, not just headaches.
Although it is often described as a constant headache.
It's right. A headache could be a targeted pain in the body, or it could be that you have this edema of the brain, cranial edema.
Mm.
Now, cranial edema means you've got this water pressure on your brain. The water's backed up. Your body is saying, I'm alone. I've got to put water everywhere I can. Migraine headaches, people talk about feeling like the head is going to explode.
But they are right.
Because there's a pressure inside.
Right.
that is trying to get released. There's a pressure
in fact,
that is built up. In fact, if you ever feel the head of somebody who's got a migraine, you feel heat.
Mm.
They are hot. One of the treatments for migraine headache is put ice on the head to cool down the brain, but you're cooling down the water.
Mm.
You're cooling it down. You're trying to get it to be less expansive.
It's amazing because, you know, when people have seizures, they're often the seizures. I'm not talking about epilepsy that people have as a condition, but I'm talking about occasional seizures. What I'm learning, Armand, is that that's what can happen when the brain is waterlogged, that it can go into a seizure. And therein lies the danger. I mean, you know, so for instance, when I see this potential, one of the things that's a simple thing to do is to drink tea. Tea is a great harmless substance for most people, and it's considerably diuretic. It doesn't hurt the liver like coffee does, can do. And green tea throughout the day helps with a constant mild diuretic effect without harming anything and giving you a bit of a boost, giving us, the person, a bit of an energy boost, which when a person is waterlogged can feel so good. You know, when a person is waterlogged, the little bit of a boost they can get from tea is great. So there is one thing, for instance, that anyone can do. But what is being researched now is how to understand this syndrome better and better in order to prevent the waterlogging of the brain or the heart, so that doctors can become more and more skilled at reading the signs of when things are headed in that direction and give just a little bit of something to decrease the water retention, just to prevent the crisis.
The real thing we want to look at is what causes it. So in dealing with the crisis, yes, there's a consideration. Yes, to all of you, my friends, I hope that you have found this information valuable. We are talking about the body's ability to retain water, but we're talking about an automatic, unconscious program set to have you retain water as part of a strategy called the refugee syndrome. Why is it called the refugee syndrome? Because it believes when your mind interprets that you have been abandoned or you're alone and you don't have anything you could lean on and that you got to get through life on your own, there is a tendency for the body to set off this little program that is meant specifically for every animal and every plant, which says, hey, you're cast out here by yourself. You got to get through. Now, even if you're cast out by yourself, you would imagine, let's say you're a little tiger cub, and suddenly you lost your mother cub and all the other cubs, and there you are. At first you're going to lay down. At first you're going to not eat. At first you're going to shiver. Then you're going to shake. You're going to do something, and then suddenly your body's going to pick you up as if some mechanism says you got to get through. And you're going to learn how to crawl out of your spot and go eat a mouse somewhere. You're going to learn how to get out of that spot and chew on something for moisture. Because the body wants you to stay alive.
And in the meantime, the kidneys are adjusted to this situation, and they are ordered by the brain to retain water.
So do not release water.
And so the kidneys have to change structurally, Armand.
Yeah, I've seen, there was when I was a kid, there was a woman who worked in the building where we worked in. I remember Mary. She worked in the building we lived in. And her job was to clean the stairs for the landlord. She would keep the building clean. She was not the superintendent, but she was a cleaning person for the building. And Mary had a kidney syndrome, which you could smell. You could smell, she smelled like urine all the time. It was in her skin. You know, she was so backed up, and she died of kidney failure. Right? And that's exactly what happened to her.
Yes, that the way that you're describing it is exactly the way it is described in these books that I'm studying, and it's called the refugee syndrome. Yes, that's exactly what happens. But if you think about it, it's such an exquisite adaptation, Armand, because it really does make sense if you think of people having to go across a desert or a baby separated from its mother or any of these situations. This is an exquisite adaptation, one that certainly saved a lot of lives. And what we're saying is the brain is still functioning in that way when it perceives that need, because it is such an important survival strategy to preserve water in the body that I doubted that the brain is ever going to abandon that strategy, Armand. It is always going to be a potential. But what I wanted to mention was, when does this happen? It can happen if you're going to a hospital, for instance, even for a day surgery. It can happen to a child on the first day of school. Anytime a person is separated from their daily life, daily routine, even if your mind on the conscious level knows that you're going to be okay, right? You're going to the hospital for a couple of days. You know you're going to be fine. But that doesn't change the fact that part of the brain still responds from that very ancient place. A child is going to school the first day, and mommy says, oh, don't worry, sweetheart, you'll be back soon, I'll come pick you up in a couple of hours. Yes, the child may understand on the conscious level that mommy is going to come back, but the brain is still going through that. So it can happen for very minor things now. It doesn't always have to be an exile or a loss of a home or a loss of a family. It can happen for very things that we consider normal.
You know, and one of the signs of depression, one of the sure signs of depression is weight gain and weight loss. And very often people will talk about how their bodies have, they've just not able to move, they're staying in bed, they're either gaining weight or losing weight, and you could tell if you drop a relationship, somebody walks out on you, if you end a relationship, if you lose a job, if you move from one place to another place, they talk of these as the giant stressors.
If you feel alone.
These are the big stressors. And they say once this depression sets in, they focus on the depression, but they do not pay attention to, Roberta, what's happened in the body once the person felt abandoned. Mm. So what therapists will do is they'll somehow work with you. But I think what we're saying here today, and I think what you're saying, Roberta, is that there is somewhat of a focus on the human body at this point that would really help a person who's in deep depression. A person who is going through this syndrome, they should see it. They should pay attention to it. There's a number of things you could do. You could not blame yourself for gaining weight. You could study whether or not this is water weight you're gaining. You can look at your edema. Doctors, not only doctors, social workers, therapists should be attentive to the physiological reaction that the person's going to. And then they put the person on medications, which very often have the effect of having you hold on to more water.
And you know that when you have this particular syndrome, Armand, often diuretics don't work?
They don't work. You can't get rid of it because they'll defeat the diuretics.
That's right.
And so they'll give you other medications that'll lift your mood, but they will also toxify your kidneys and your liver, and you go further and further into this syndrome, which is not leading to a very good place. Hey, this is Armand Damour with Roberta Atti. We have just brought you the tip of the iceberg. We are talking about water retention, solitude, the idea of being alienated or abandoned. We're talking about how there is a development of a thing called the refugee syndrome. And we're talking about how the refugee syndrome, very often one of the common parts of the refugee syndrome, is the water retention, which can now manifest all over your body as weight gains and weight changes, but could also actually get as far up as your head, give you a floating edema, which could give you a kind of a pressure in your brain that could give you any number of symptoms. Want to pay attention to this. This is the first in a three-part series on the refugee syndrome that Roberta and I will be talking about. We have to be leaving you now, unfortunately. If you want a copy of today's program, you would call 1-800. I'm sorry. 1-800-575-0580. 1-800-575-0580. Armand@brainlink.com is how you could reach me, BRAINLINK.com, if you want to reach Roberta. Roberta for Health, with the number 4 in the middle, at AOL.com. Back with you soon, my friends.